Welcome to episode 34 of the Burning Bush Podcast, where we share the message of the Bible while enjoying a good cigar. Hope everybody's having a good week, and thanks again for stopping by to check out the podcast with me. This week I am smoking the La Perla Habana Classic Maduro Toro 6.5x54. And I have the, usually I'll go to the manufacturer's website, which I have linked up in the show notes every week. So I'm just going to go right to cigarsinternational.com because, frankly, the La Perla Habana website, blackpearlcigars.com, has almost no information about these cigars other than three little lines and the three vitolas that it comes in. So I'm just going to read from cigarsinternational.com. It's more informative and has a lot more detail. So cigarsinternational.com says, La Perla Habana Classic Maduro, a recipe for success and a veritable masterpiece in waiting. This right here is yet another example why being a boutique burning lunatic in today's cigar world is, well, right. Feels right, tastes right, and in many cases, such as this, priced right. Take the same top-selling LPH classic combo of aged Honduran, Nicaraguan, and Dominican long fillers. Blend them inside a hefty 54-ring frame. Carefully drape a dark and oily Brazilian Arapiraca Maduro wrapper around this tasty combo. Lock them in the aging vault for a long cedar nap. Boom! Instant winner. LPH Classic Maduro is deep in rich, chewy flavors. A toasty, medium-bodied boutique offers balanced notes of oak, earth, leather, and semi-sweet spices throughout the slow burn. And the details, profile is medium. Wrapper is a Maduro. The binder and filler is Dominican, Honduran, and Nicaraguan. And the vitolas are Gordo 6x60, Robusto 5x52, and the Toro 6.5x54. That is the information from Cigars International. I'll just let you know what their website says. La Perla Habana Classic Maduro, triple fermented Brazilian Maduro wrapper, rich notes of coffee, oak, earth and leather, medium bodied, and then the vitolas. That's all the information you get from their website. So I thought the Cigars International was much more interesting. So now that we've taken care of this week's cigar, let's go ahead and get back into What Does God Want by Dr. Michael Heiser. This week's section from chapter 9 is entitled Disciples Take Care of Each Other. This element of discipleship is an outgrowth of loving one another. Taking care of each other means being in and nurturing community. As more and more people came to embrace the gospel in the days following Pentecost, Acts 2, 1-4, they became part of a growing community that would be called the church. In their case, the one at Jerusalem. In the New Testament, this term didn't refer to a building or an official organization. The New Testament tells us that the church in Jerusalem was notoriously poor. They didn't have a building to meet in, and there were thousands of new believers. Acts 2:41 and 47 and 5:14. They didn't have any official legal status, so believers were persecuted. Acts 3:11 through 4:31 and 5:17 through 42. If the church wasn't about a building or an organization that had legal status, what did it mean? How did the followers of Jesus sustain themselves? They formed a tight, self-sacrificing community. Too often in modern churches, we use the word community to describe something more similar to a group of people who share an interest, like being fans of a sports team or mutual supporters of a good cause. That falls far short of what New Testament community was. The New Testament church community was a family. What's the difference between family and a group of people who bond together because of a mutual interest? Lots of things. Would you expect someone to give you money to pay your rent or groceries just because you like the same baseball team? Would you expect someone to give you a job or fix your car just because you voted for the same person or ran in the same 5K race to raise money for a cause? Of course not. But you would expect help from family members, or at least that's the way family, blood relations, is supposed to work. That's what the early church was like. Here's a glimpse. So those who received his word were baptized, and there were added that day about 3,000 souls. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number, day by day, those who were being saved. Acts chapter 2, 41 through 47. This passage doesn't describe communism or socialism. It doesn't describe any political system. There's nothing in the passage about a government or the state giving direction or using coercion for the behavior you see. It was entirely voluntary. It describes the behavior of a healthy, normal family. Families meet the needs of their members. This one just happened to consist of thousands of people. This is a picture of what disciples do. They nurture community. They love one another and support one another like a family would do. That means sharing resources. For some believers, that may mean money. For others, it may mean time or a service or a skill. Basically, community does what needs to be done for those in the community. You might wonder, with so many people involved, how this community could know each other. Believers would gather together in the temple, which usually caused conflict with the Jewish leaders but was good for evangelism, and met from house to house, Acts 2:46 and 5:42. This means that the church in Jerusalem, the original Christian community, was actually a network of smaller communities. People in smaller numbers within the community were the first line of support and acknowledgement of new believers. These communities were the entry points for new believers. The Christian community was for people who had embraced the gospel. Each community participated in the discipleship of its members, and in certain ways, believers in the wider, larger community. I got a relight. Cigar went out, so it wasn't... I'm not sure it was really lit too well to begin with before I started the podcast. So just give me a second to relight here and we'll get going again. This La Perla Habana is really good smoke. I would highly recommend you try these out. This is my first time having them. What did this look like? The first thing that usually happened was to baptize new believers. Acts 2:41, 8:12 through 13, 10:47 to 48, and 16:15. Baptism was a public act. It was observed by witnesses, other community members, to identify with Jesus and his followers. It signified several things, among them that your sins had been forgiven because of what Jesus had done on the cross, and that you now had new life, Romans 6, 1-4, and 2 Corinthians 5:17. Baptism was the first step to entering into the life of the community. The persons being baptized acknowledged their faith in Jesus, and the witnesses acknowledged their commitment. When communities of believers met together, they discovered needs. If they could meet the needs of people in their small community, they would do so. This allowed believers who met needs to imitate Jesus. For those who were helped, they learned in real time how to live like Jesus. When needs were greater than the small community could meet, the wider family of believers was there to help. It was for this wider coordination of ministry that the apostles, the original disciples of Jesus who were leaders of the fledgling Jerusalem church, appointed helpers, deacons, to organize the daily distribution, likely of food, throughout the entire community, Acts 6, 1-7. One of the practices of the earliest church in this regard was to hold a feast in connection with remembering the Lord's Supper, 1 Corinthians 11, 17-34. The Lord's Supper was a memorial celebration of the Last Supper, when Jesus told the disciples that his body and blood would soon be given for them. Jesus told them that giving his life was a fulfillment of the new covenant, Luke 22:20. The description of the feast at the Lord's Supper says the same thing, 1 Corinthians 11:25. The Lord's Supper was a way to remember what Jesus had done. Jesus had told his disciples to do it in remembrance of me, 1 Corinthians 11, 24-25. It was also another way to make sure the poor in the believing community were taken care of. That'll finish that section of What Does God Want? By Dr. Mike Heiser, entitled Disciples Take Care of Each Other, from Chapter 9. And next week we'll dive back in again, as we come to the last few weeks of reading in this book. So again, thanks for stopping by, and I encourage you to check out the show notes for everything we talk about here. All of Mike Heiser's stuff, his Naked Bible podcast, all of his books, his Awakening School of Theology, and again, please keep him in prayer for his pancreatic cancer, that the Lord would take that away and heal him completely. And also check out the link for Groundworks Ministries at groundworksministries.com for daily Bible studies and devotions. And also the Burning Bush Podcast merchandise store, if you'd like to pick up a t-shirt, a mug, a sticker, a magnet, anything like that to let people know and help spread the word about the show. So thanks again, and until next week, have a great day, have a great cigar, and God bless. Thank you.